feet up, breaking all the lights on the doors. And I ain't seen no ceilings. We came in through the top floor. Three R's rip right round your jugular. Three R's rip right.
You're listening to Feminist Killjoys, PhD, an hour of feminism, pop culture, and politics, as discussed by two professional killjoys.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Melody.
And today we'll be sitting down with two of our favorite feminist podcasters, Molly of Smash Everything and Lacey of Flex Your Heart Radio, to answer your questions that we received from you on things like wokeness and fitness and eating disorder recovery and witch practices and more. But first, Melody, where can our listeners find us on the internet?
Great question, Rachel. I would like to tell you that you can find us in select places. You should first subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. And if you already subscribe to us, please tell a friend to subscribe to us as well. And we would love if you could leave us a review on iTunes, because it's a great way to spread the word about us and gain new followers. On the social meds tip, you know that you can find us on the Gram, the Twitter, and the FB. You can like us on FB for episode updates, or you can join our closed community page where you can chit chat with us. Just search for Feminist Killjoys Community WTF Power ! To find us on that community page. On the Fi, we have a Feminist Killjoys PhD mixtape, which you can follow. And if you have extra dollars and you want to support us feminist media makers, you can subscribe to our Patreon. Our Patreon donors, or our patrons, as they like to call y'all, get access to our Feminist Killjoys newsletter, which is the Killjoy Review, curated by Rachel, and I often throw in content there as well. And then if you patron us at a $5 or more level, you also get access to our bonus episodes, and we are going to be shortly recording our final Bachelorette, What Up Bachelorette, bonus ep for this season. So you will get access to that as well. And then we're going to be doing non-bachelorette bonus ups from moving forward. And then finally, last but not least, you can email us at fkj.phd@gmail.com. How are you, Rachel?
I'm well. I just want to give an extra shout out to our patrons, our Patreon subscribers, because they always trickle in, and I'm always just so, like, truly humbled and blown away that people want to give some dollars our way. And it really, 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 really means a lot. We put a lot of time and love into this. So it's incredibly helpful to be able to devote time and be compensated for that labor. So I think our two most recent ones were Siobhan and Lauren. So thank you both to you. I think you both came in just last week. And if you don't see your newsletter in your inbox, check your spam folders as well for all of you who subscribe. So that was just a quick side note on that.
Thank you.
Did you hear my terrible attempt at the Wayne's World voice on the last episode, on Elena's episode?
I think you did really good. And I also like the Rachelification of it as well.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
And to be fair, I mean, I have so much practice doing it. Like, I've been doing it for all these episodes.
It's true. Yeah. Same with my air horn noise.
See?
We each have our own skills with sound making.
Yeah.
I'm okay. This past week was Girls Rock Camp. I don't even think I talked about it on air because we haven't talked together in so long. I signed up to volunteer for Girls Rock Camp, which I had known about when I lived in Chicago. I had friends that coached at Girls Rock Camp, which is basically a feminist-founded camp where girls ages, I think, 7 through 16, I think is the cutoff, come for 1 week to form bands, and they pick what instrument, either drums, keys, guitar, bass, or vocals, and they do their training in the morning, and then in the afternoon, they get in these little band formations, and they pick a band name, write a song, make really punk rock silkscreen logos and put them on t-shirts. And interspersed through all that is just literally like militant feminist workshops and call and responses. And it's an incredibly powerful, amazing experience for both the girls and the and also the youth, because they're totally open to non-binary youth as well. And also for all of us who have the privilege of coaching them. So that was last week, and it was exhausting because young people are so much work. And Melody, a special double always shout out to you for all the childcare work that you do, and to parents, obviously, but Melody's right here, so I'm going to give her a shout out for all of her childcare. Because young people are a lot of energy, but it was so worth it. And I'm so glad I did it. And they had their concert on Saturday, and it was really adorable. If you don't already follow me on the gram, you should go onto my page, Rebel Girl Rachel. I Insta-storied every single one of the bands, but you can still see a couple of the photos and videos on my actual page. It was so much fun. So I was on such a high, and that was Saturday. You know, I had the whole week up to Saturday. And then after I left the show, I like looked at my phone and saw everything about Charlottesville. And, you know, that high was pretty fucking deflated to be reminded that the world is not the utopia that was Girls Rock Camp. So feeling, you know, tender and reflective about what my role is in responding to what admittedly is nothing new. You know, Charlottesville is not new, and people of color in the world know that, but just being reflective about that. So what about you?
Yeah, I feel like similar to when the terrorist attack at Pulse happened, it's like extra intense because that could have totally been us.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? Like that woman reflects you and me and a lot of our friends.
Yeah.
And not just because she's a white woman. I mean, just, you know, we go to a lot of protests and we go to a lot of marches. And I think I've been kind of, my rage meter is a lot lower, but not because I don't, maybe because it is so close to home that it's like a protection thing where I'm just kind of like closing myself off from really like thinking about it, just reflecting on like my emotional reaction to it, I guess. Yeah. Or possibly that it's such, I don't know. I just don't even know. This is, I think a lot of my energy is now spent, I'm thinking about what I'm going to do when my semester hits, you know, like, because I think there's a lot of people being like, if you're a educator, like, make sure that this is one of the first things you talk about, which I'm totally fine. You know, I want to do that. But, you know, it's, you know, as people know, anti-racist work is very hard work, and you have to go in it with all of your energy and not think like, maybe the students can't handle it today, or, you know, maybe I shouldn't write that piece, you know, maybe it's a little too harsh, you know, you have to like kind of go for it. So, you know, that's where I'm kind of shifting my thinking, but it's, I don't know. It's, what else can you say? People have said it, you know?
Right. Yeah. But you're in Baltimore right now, or a little outside of it.
Yeah. No big deal. Just hanging out with, Dr. Carol Stabile, hanging with her. She's a good friend of mine that I've known for a long time. So academic people might know who she is, but I'm sitting in her colleague's office recording this. So I'm at the University of Maryland, and everything is going well, hanging out with the fam. We went to the African American Museum in D.C. yesterday. That was my second time going in a year, which is awesome.
Great.
And just in terms of the media thing, they have a whole floor for culture. And so this is beyond the historical stuff that gets a lot of the press and attention. But they also have, I mean, I'd even say like two floors, because there's all this sports stuff. And then if you go up another floor, it's all about Black style, and then music, theater, TV, film. So I would go just to spend a whole day just on that floor.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And of course, you know, there's, you know, I'm always looking at gender, of course. And I think, you know, both in the music and the sports sections, they could have, you know, worked in a few more women. Like, for example, they didn't have like a big setup on Venus and Serena, even though they had like a big setup on Michael Jordan.
Right.
So they got a statue, but it's like, if we're looking at athletes that have really pushed limits on, you know, what it means to be an African-American and a woman in the sports fields, especially tennis, I mean, that's Venus and Serena for sure.
Right.
So, you know, I was just, of course, always have my critical lens on, but they did have a few snippets of Lynx, Minnesota Lynx stuff in some of the video.
Oh, cool.
That they had.
Fun.
Yeah. So that was fun to see. So that was good. And then, yeah, my just very, very quickly, my hand is still effed from a kickball injury. The saving grace is that the physician assistant I work with is, I'm not kidding you, a vegan bodybuilder named Jen.
Oh, my gosh.
Shout out to Jen, the vegan bodybuilder. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I would probably be like in a much poorer mood about all this, but knowing that I get to see her, you know, at appointments is like, well, I get to see Jen, you know, and she just gets me. And I was very skeptical about getting surgery, not because I'm against Western medicine, but just because it's like, it's a pinky finger. Do right. I need effing surgery? She was a very active person. And so I could talk to her as an active person saying like, is this really necessary if I want to lift weights and ride my bike? And so she was, you know, we could talk about it at a different level. Oh my God, so grateful that the universe like put me with her.
Totally.
The silver,
rad.
The big shining ball of sun in the very darkness of having an injury. I mean, I'm very lucky. I have surgery, I had healthcare, it's all good. Very, very right. lucky. You become very extra grateful of your body when things like
totally.
This happen. So
totally.
Okay.
Yeah, that's actually a really great segue, hearing about vegan bodybuilders, to our guests for today, since Lacey Davis is a vegan health coach and heavyweight lifter, and Molly Woodstock is a health journalist in a really radical feminist, awesome way. And we were so excited to sit down with them and answer questions about various things we got from our listeners, and we got way more questions than we were able to get to, so we really hope we get to do a part two with them because it was a lot of fun. And anything else you want to say before you take us away?
No, just enjoy the feminist party that awaits you.
Hi, everybody. So glad we're all together to answer some listener questions. We got a bunch and we can't get to them all, so maybe we can have a part two at some point.
Before we get any further, can we do a pronoun go around and an astrological sign go around?
Yes. Melody, you start.
Hi, I'm Melody. It's good to be here. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm an Aquarius.
I'm Lacey. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a Pisces, which means I cry all the time.
I'm Rachel. I use she, her pronouns, and I am an Aquarius.
I'm Molly. I'm a they, and I'm a Sagittarius.
You are?
I have the same birthday as Nicole J. George's.
Sagittarian matters. Matters. That's awesome. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I love that story. Everyone that I love, with the exception of Molly, and that this isn't a true statement, a lot of people that I love are Aquarians. Kat's an Aquarian too. What a world. I'm gonna ask a question. Our first question, is that okay?
Yes,
do we have
please.
To do something else first?
No, okay. Let's do it.
Our first question is, I'm just gonna read them in order. It's as follows. I have a question. How can we appear more inclusive towards people who may not be super woke yet, but are genuinely trying? I feel like the intersectional narrative gets a bit woker than thou sometimes, which is counterproductive to spreading the message.
I've been really wanting to talk about this question because I think I was like naturally ingrained with the tendency to correct people, even when it's not necessarily important to correct them. You know, like correcting people's grammar can sometimes be just like classist and elitist and shitty. And so I'm starting to wonder whether, like, there's a lot of dialogue about transgender stuff going around, and there are a lot of people saying transgendered ED or transgenders with an S. And my first instinct is to be like, no, 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 that's wrong. But I don't know if that is more harm than good, because if people are saying transgenders in the context of I support transgenders and I want them to have rights, is it really helpful for me to be like, but you're doing it wrong? So that's why I wanted to talk about this question. I'm wondering what you people think about that.
I have a lot to say about this as well. I think that there's a way to correct someone that's not shitty. Here's something that I would do. If someone says something incorrectly, I sometimes present the more socially acceptable term or concept or whatever in this way that it kind of implicates myself. For example, like if someone says, oh, that person is female bodied, which is at some point that was a term that I thought was like respectful to use. And then someone told me, actually someone told the whole internet, like, hey, internet, female bodied is not a term. Don't fucking use it. And I was like, oh shit, I use that term. But you know what? I like now when I hear people say that, I'm like, oh my God, check it out. I used to say that too. And I actually learned that it's disrespectful and it's clear that you're like trying to be respectful. So I'll tell you what I learned about that term and like what I use instead now. And I kind of present it in this way that's like, oh, like, look at me. I'm gloriously flawed, just like you. Let's be less flawed together. So that's one idea around corrections. Another idea that I have is it is okay to ask people to expand their comfort levels. The work that I personally do is a lot. First of all, I'm in the fitness industry. Second of all, I do a lot of anti-diet work. And it makes people really uncomfortable. It makes some people that are amazingly smart, compassionate, caring feminists really uncomfortable when I say that I don't believe in dieting and I don't think dieting is a body positive thing to do. It like uproariously hurts people when I say that. And it's people that I don't want to be hurting. It's people that I care about a lot, but they just get really sad when I say like, hey, I don't think you can diet and be body positive. That's just my opinion. I think you can call yourself literally anything else, but body positive actually means a specific thing, which is anti-dieting. And I think it's okay to make people uncomfortable. I think it's okay to say, I don't know. For me, like that specific thing is like a boundary. And I'm not going to be mean, but I do think it's perfectly reasonable to voice our opinions. Like I don't want to be personally inclusive to the detriment of being able to speak my truth. What do y'all think?
I think I would echo a lot of that, particularly the sort of humility aspect of like, hey, I am imperfect also as I am correcting you, and to allow the challenges of discomfort to be invitations rather than shutting people down. So it's kind of related to the sort of call in versus call out stuff that we've talked about before on FKJ. So I think I echo a lot of that. And but also that said, Molly, to your point, you know, I think there are times that I'm just more invested in, and this is probably blasphemy for me to say for a lot of people in particular that I went to grad school with who study rhetoric and like the power of language and words, which I very much believe in. And also, I do admittedly start to feel a little bit get off my lawn when I hear or see the internet like explode in rage at somebody who said the wrong word and sort of ignore the fact that the intent and content of their message is mostly good. And I know that intention doesn't equal impact. And I teach that in my, you know, in my classes, that it doesn't matter if you didn't mean to be racist. If you were racist, you were racist. And also, you know, I think that these things are there are gray areas and there's nuance to these conversations that we don't necessarily allow in quote unquote SJW spaces. So I think I agree with both of you, and also just think that it can be complicated and situational and circumstantial and et cetera. Melody?
I would say that I think this is an actual real problem, that people have attitudes about being woker than thou. And I think that we all need to like keep each other in check about the way that we talk to people about these things, because I have been a part of conversations where a very particular activist is like very right on about all of their politics and genderqueer performativity and how to refer to people. Like they're, you know, they're on the cutting edge and they always know kind of, you know, as things move along, like Lacey's example about using female or male bodied, they are the first to know that that is incorrect, right? But because of their tone, a lot of people have kind of shied away from that person. And there's every social justice warrior space has this person, right? But the issue is that it keeps other people from joining and it turns people off from these spaces. And so while we might have very real anger and very real strong arguments for why we want chosen language or whatever the case may be, we have to watch our tone, and not in a way of like, don't be that angry person, but with the understanding of inclusivity. And there's ways to talk to people. And I think often it's one-on-one conversations. Then that way, if people are having feelings about being called out, they can have them directly with you, you know, or one person, instead of having to respond to the whole internet or in front of, you know, a group of people. In the times that I've been called in or called out and it's been a one-on-one situation, it's been difficult, but it's been a lot more productive. And even if in the end I'm like, well, you know, thank you for giving that for me to like chew on. And I will, you know, even if I'm not there right away, I remember those conversations later. And I've done a lot of calling in with my brothers who are all younger than me. And I've done a various, you know, a various approaches, but it's often one-on-one. It's the times in which they really respond negatively is when I call them out in public, often on internet threads. Oh, your top 10 favorite artists are all men. That's interesting. You know, making my little snide comments. That's when they get really angry with me and get really defensive. But if I just have side comments, side conversations with them, things work out a lot better. So I'm definitely in the camp right now, and I'm a teacher, so I have that framework that we do have to watch how we are talking with people, and that I am seeing, you know, on a daily basis, people getting pushed away because of how people decide to talk about what is being said is, you know, incorrect, but the tone can really turn people off, which is not what we want as social justice warriors, that I'm using in scare quotes.
Yeah, I'm still ruminating on this. Maybe I'm like more, I don't know. I guess it really also depends on the context and also the issue. Like I was thinking another example where I do feel a strong need to correct is misgendering. I like just really quickly try to be like, nope, wrong pronoun, this or whatever, and not have it be like really gentle and kind, because I want to get it over quickly, especially if the person is like, if a trans person is being misgendered to their face, I want to quickly let the person doing the misgendering know that they've made a mistake and move on. So it's not like on the trans person to like have to explain. But I do think a lot about this because I have some strong opinions and I think it's okay. But I also don't call people out on the internet either. Maybe I call my opinions out on my own internet platforms, but not on theirs, you know?
Yeah, we could surely say a lot more, but let's move on to our next question. Question number 2, how to transition from a disordered eating mindset to eating for your goals, fitness/fitness, without obsessively tracking food so you can feel like a badass in the gym again. So how do you transition from a disordered eating mindset to the other things I said?
The other things, to the badass mindset.
To the badass mindset.
Yes. Of course, I love this question. It's a very simple question, but I think it is a very complicated answer. And the first thing that I have to know for myself is that I believe I'll never be recovered. I'll always be a person in recovery. And I am doing really fucking well. But even with that fact in mind, I am a person in the fitness industry that is somewhat constantly inundated with images and ideologies that are not healthy for me. So I am very careful. So the first thing I will say is always, I'm willing to venture, you should be careful with yourself and what you're consuming, because people that have been freaky with food before can always be freaky with food again. To that end, I will say also, get really ready to unfollow shit that triggers you. I unfollow publications and people like really all the time that are in the kind of like fitness realm. And it's not because I don't like them. In some cases, I actually think they're great people. I just literally cannot. I cannot follow that, because if I see too much diet content, there's a little tiny piece of me that will always wonder if I should be engaging in that same stuff myself. So I treat myself like I am on the verge of relapse all the time, even though I'm really not. Like I constitutionally feel pretty fine, but I know that that shit can lurk in the wings and pop up at any time. Don't track your food unless there's a medical reason that you need to, or like, I guess I could see some circumstances where people struggle with not eating enough. Like, maybe you want to track your food for a time then. But I think it is much more healthy to just make little goals in terms of how you're eating that might help you with your fitness. So, like, a little goal that I have is I try to eat some protein with every meal. And it's really chill. Like, there's no rule about how much. And if I don't do it for a meal, I don't freak out. But having just that little goal makes me feel like, okay, I'm eating in a way that supports my weightlifting practice without obsessing over it really in any regard. I hate food tracking. I hate it. I hate food and macro tracking. And I think it is not good for people that have a disordered relationship with food. That being said, I have never had binge eating disorder, and I'm starting to realize that a lot of the ways that I talk about eating disorder recovery are really me talking about my eating disorder recovery, so I can't necessarily speak to that particular thing. But the best way to not obsessively track food is simply to not track food. Like, don't do it. You don't probably don't need to. Anyone else?
Yeah, this is Melody. Hi, I'm Melody. It's good to be here. I will also echo the importance of not, including not following people on the internet. Stop reading Cosmo, stop reading Shape, like stop reading all those magazines, because that was one of the things that I kicked out of my life pretty early on in my like feminist immersion or whatever. And it changed me. But also when I do engage with those magazines, I catch myself thinking like, oh, maybe I do need to lose 10 pounds or oh, maybe I need to like get that foundation so I can have flawless skin. Me of all people, you know, but it's so easy to trigger that stuff because we've been taught that at such a young age to that's just how our brains operate. So I totally echo and I tell this to my young female students as well to like just stop reading that stuff. It's powerful. And although I like to think that people who consume media, you can control the message. Some of that shit, it's just too deeply ingrained. I don't have power over it. Fierce feminist person. And also I echo the not tracking your food thing. And I think especially if you, and I'm going to just make a general statement about men, but men who have not gone through eating disorder behavior in their life don't think about this. And so when a person I was working with wanted me to track food, I started doing it and I was like, I can't, this feels really bad. And I just stopped. And he was disappointed in me because I wasn't sending him my updates, but I'm like, I cannot do this. And I talked to my brother who's also in the physical fitness world. And I said, you know, be careful. You know, I don't know how you want to go about this, but you might want to ask people. Like, tracking food is not something that everybody can do. And you need to find a different way to get them to their goals that doesn't include calorie counting and protein tracking, because it's just too triggering for people. And I don't know if gender-wise, just to make a generalization, that men, if they haven't gone through this, they don't get it.
I would add that Lacey and I just talked about this on a Smash Everything podcast that I made, but like, I think it's really important, in addition to what everyone else said, to keep in mind that health is being sold to you and that health is being used as this marketing tool that really is just another version of beauty or of skinny or whatever. And yes. So a lot of things that people tell you you need to do for your goals, you don't actually need to do. They're going to tell you that you have to eat this exact amount of calories or this exact amount of protein or weigh this much or have this body fat, and you don't need that. Your goal is not about eating. Your goal is about like lifting weights or about running or whatever, and your body is going to look different as you reach those goals, but you don't know what your body looks like to do that. You don't know what your body needs to look like if you want to run a marathon or if you want to lift 200 pounds or whatever, and you're going to find out along the way. And so don't listen to people when they tell you really specific things. Like, it is a good idea to know which foods are high in protein, but like, I was 0.1 of a measurement that doesn't matter, but like away from being diabetic, and I got down to a normal blood sugar without tracking, with just having a general idea of what foods had proteins and what foods had carbs and what foods had sugar. And because I have an eating disorder background, and I knew that I couldn't track. And so I just sort of had a concept in mind, like Lacey said, of like trying to have protein with every meal and like having basic goals and basic concepts around macros without actually writing it down or without actually like worrying too much about it. And, you know, it all worked out. So I would just, you know, be really skeptical of what people are telling you, even if they're in the fitness industry, because they've all been like force fed the same garbage their whole careers, right? Do what feels good for your body and like listen to your body. And if it's asking for something specific, try to feed it that. Eat whether you think that's a good choice or a bad choice, like just try to give your body what it needs.
Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want to say about this is I did track my food for a long time. More and more, I was realizing it was not healthy for me. And as I transitioned away from it, I realized that I had literally no clue what, when, or how to eat without that structure. And you don't want to let someone take that away from you. Like, being like, I'm hungry, I'm going to eat this thing that's available to me because I'm hungry and it's here, is like, it's a freedom that I don't take for granted because I spent so long, you know, like mired in this control. And that was a time when I would not have said I was engaging in disordered behavior. It was a time when I said I was eating for my goals. So I think diets are sold to us in many different packages, and eating for your fitness goals is included in that title, I guess. It's a diet a lot of the time.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I just wanted to add that the best way to end up binging on something is to restrict it. And so if you say, I can't eat cookies because of my goals, or I can't eat ice cream because of my goals, like that makes you much more likely to like eat a whole pint of ice cream than you were going to be if you were just like, I can have a little bit of ice cream every night if I want, or every day if I want. So just, I would just like really encourage against like eliminating entire foods or entire groups of foods, and just like try to practice more intuitive eating in moderation. And maybe that is hard at first, but I think it is easier. And I think that a lot of people, including me and Lacey, were really scared to see what would happen if we ate intuitively. And it worked like so much better than either of us expected, I think.
Yep.
I think you guys covered it. That was good.
Nailed it.
Rachel, you want to start on the next one since we cut you out of that one?
Sure. Do you want to read it?
I can read it.
How do you deal? Yeah, go for it.
Let's all read Rachel. It simultaneously. Ready? 3, 2,
and go. How do you deal with sex? Melody.
I'm going to be quiet. Go ahead, Lacey.
How do you deal with sexist, homophobic, racist, bigoted behavior at work? Or do you at all? Rachel.
So, may I recommend listening to episode 63 of FKJ PhD, which talks about sexual harassment at the workplace. And one of the, I think, takeaways from that episode, and also from countless stories of people who experience sexism, et cetera, at the workplace, is that reporting it to HR doesn't always work. So just be aware of that, in the same way that we've talked very bluntly about how sometimes calling the cops doesn't fix things. Sometimes reporting problems doesn't fix things, because we live in a society that doesn't care about marginalized people who are disproportionately the victims of sexism, homophobia, racism, and bigoted behavior. So reporting it to the sort of authorities, the people who are trying to protect the company that you work for, isn't necessarily the best route. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but it may not give you the results that you desire. And in some cases, it may make it worse. So that is some bleak reality check kind of thing. That said, I think interpersonal sort of confrontation, or getting allies to sort of help create interventions into this kind of stuff, is hit or miss. I've had not so great experiences. I once called out some transphobia on an email thread to some new colleagues, and basically they didn't like speak to me for a week, and I felt like a very serious tone shift, because I became like very much like the killjoy of the office when I was like, hey guys, maybe don't share a gif of Ace Ventura throwing up after he kissed the quote unquote man in that movie, and act like it's so funny when you're like adult men. And then I was kind of ignored, and nobody responded to that. So anyway, it doesn't always work. I feel like I'm being really pessimistic. Melody, I think you want to jump in on this one. Maybe save this a little bit, bring some optimism or some actual good tangible advice to this.
Yeah, so I would say the first thing you want to do when you're dealing with the situation at work is to figure out if it's worth your energy to continue to deal with this. Because sometimes if it's a minor, all of it is a problem. But we live in a society in which, depending on what was said or done, a lot of people in the society don't take these things very seriously as a problem. So you want to first think about your workplace, who you have as allies and advocates and accomplices, and think about whether it's worth your time and energy to move forward with it. And if you think it is, then definitely move forward with it. Something that I always, always do is I email somebody about the situation. So it isn't HR, it isn't my boss, but I might say, you know, I just would email my coworker and be like, oh my God, can I please tell you what happened with me and Tim today? And then they'll obviously, yeah. And I'll say, oh, Tim said this. And so it's documented, because what that does is, if there is a pattern of behavior with one person or a department or a group of people, you have it documented. And that documentation is extremely important if you ever want to do anything in the future. And then from there, you know, I think Rachel's point about creating kind of an an organization of accomplices at the workplace is very important. If you're by yourself, that is a whole different set of advice. And I would just say document, document, document. If you can, so I've slowly at my workplace kind of found out who my friends are. And if the situation is bad enough, I have found kind of people on every rung of the ladder to contact. And then sometimes things get addressed in a way that I feel is appropriate. But you also need to be ready to have a lot of anger and energy about the situation and have nothing happen, which is unfortunately much, much too common. And that's why I started my advice with, you need to think about whether it's worth your time and energy. Because at least in my workplace, where we have a lot of educated people around that are apparently like know like how to operate in society, things still come up. And I've wasted my energy. I've gotten very angry about things that the solution, you know, the problem was quote unquote solved, you know, the problematic thing was taken down or the person was talked to or whatever. But in the end, my anger and energy could have been spent on creating a better environment in the workplace that wasn't necessarily about targeting that exact situation. So with that said, again, my two pieces of advice is it worth energy and just document it in case you want to go forward with it. If not that week, you know, in the future, I would say, yes, deal with it, but deal with it. It just depends on the context, but also don't ignore it. Just find a way to document it and then go from there.
Real quick, another term for an organization of allies is a union. So obviously, listeners probably know that I'm very pro-union. So in theory, you know, a union is a place that, you know, your union can help represent you in these kinds of situations. And if there is success in reporting things, it's often because there is a worker organization behind it. So organize your workplaces, comrades. Lacey, Molly, ideas, thoughts?
I have a couple of thoughts, but I don't know how useful they'll be for people experiencing like the most nefarious version of this. I had an incident when I first got to my company where I was being bullied by, I think, multiple people, including like the publisher and this like straight white guy. And I went to HR and HR sided with the people who were bullying me. And the only reason that like I was successful in anything was that I went to my boss and my boss went to my boss's boss and both of them were on my side. But they couldn't really do anything to stop it. They could just sort of tell me that I wasn't alone. In another instance, my friend went to HR at the same company to complain about a different publisher being abusive, and she ended up getting fired. And so I don't have like good charming stories about this because it really just depends like whether your boss and your boss's boss are on your side, in my experience. With regards to just like basic homophobic or racist or sexist comments, I do a lot of checking people's shitty comments at my work, but I'm lucky in that everyone is like really well-intentioned. And so like I had an instance where an editor of mine said something that was like really queerphobic, and I ended up just sending him a message afterwards and saying like, this really hurt my feelings and here's why this hurt my feelings. And he called me into his office and said, I'm so sorry. As soon as I started saying it, I regretted it. I didn't mean it. I was just repeating something someone else had said like uncritically, and I really regret it and I won't do it again. And I'm just so sorry. And that was great. But like, there's going to be a lot of bosses who aren't sorry and who don't give a shit what you think and whether your feelings were hurt. And so again, I just feel like all of my experiences come back to like whether it's like sort of benign mistakes and whether like people are on your side or whether it's just like you're all alone. And then I don't have any advice because that behavior is unacceptable. But when you're surrounded by it, like it just seems like a nightmare and I would just hide. I don't know.
Next question.
So I've been listening to the podcast, Oh No, Ross and Carrie. And they did an episode on We Are All Africans. The group argues that the Judeo-Christian religions are just a product of imperialism. The leader urges African Americans to go back to their religious roots, regardless if they are praying to a quote-unquote real God or not. This made me wonder, Rachel likes practicing various witchy woo-woo stuff. Is it because you really believe crystals will heal you? Or is it more a radical act against modern religious institutions?
I love this question. So first, I do think there is a little bit of rebellion to sort of mainstream Western religions, because I was raised kind of loosely and then got kind of like almost evangelical about it for like a year and a half of my young life. And, you know, I very much do not identify with that at all. It's fine if we have listeners who do identify as that. I do not. And the church that I sort of felt like I got a little brainwashed in certainly does not, you know, preach things that I agree with at all. So there is, I think, a little bit of rebellion. But what I'm sort of more interested in defending, I think, about chakras and crystals and witch rituals and all of those things that I find so much value in, and astrology and tarot, etc., is that I really don't like the way that we in the West, particularly on the supposed like left side of the political spectrum, uphold science as, I'm not saying I'm anti-science, I believe in vaccines, science is real. And also, I think that this sort of like every single thing that Gwyneth Paltrow says, I mean, I don't like Gwyneth Paltrow and I don't like capitalist appropriation of healing rituals, but it's not like everything that she says, for example, that like turmeric helps decrease inflammation, whatever, you know, all of these things that she says that sort of get lumped in with this sort of goop and or new agey witch stuff and or whatever you want to call it. It's so dismissive of the roots of those spiritual practices, which are often rooted in native traditions, Eastern traditions, other Haitian. I was just talking to a friend about the use of voodoo and quote unquote black magic in the Haitian Revolution, which is one of the most like badass fucking slave revolts of history. And they, many of the people fighting against their colonizers and slaves owners were believed that they were using magic in order to help defeat the slave owners and the imperialists. So I think it's really fucking dismissive of those traditions in a way that makes me really uncomfortable, when I think a lot of like pro-science liberals are like, puh, that weirdo stuff. And it's like, well, these things have like roots in things that I'm not remotely dismissive of. And also, so that's one thing. And then also, if we want to talk about like whether or not crystals will help heal you, like that's no weirder than saying seven Hail Marys or whatever. Like Christianity is like super fucking weird if you think about it, what it suggests, that you eat Christ's body and that Christ walked on water and all of these things that are very magical. So it's very strange to me that Christians find this kind of stuff so out there, when it's like you are also talking about like zombies and magic and things like that. And witches don't even talk about zombies. So, well, my witches don't. So that's a lot of stuff about that. Also, yoga, chakras, crystals, etc. There actually is, if we want to go back to science, there actually is science to that. It's like natural elements interacting with your body and moving your body in particular ways that creates energy. Like you're creating energy in your body that is actually tangibly creating material changes. Chakras are like literal energy points in your body. Like energy is not weird and new age. Energy is like a real thing. That's some stuff. What about you guys? You all?
I will say, from my astrology perspective, and also to just kind of add on to what you just said, Rachel, is that because they brought in kind of that imperialism thing, and then so I started thinking about cultural appropriation and stuff. And I think as long as, just to say this, like as long as you're educated on the background of what you're practicing, I think it's cool. The way that Rachel practices seems pretty legit to me. I know that there's times in which some of that yoga stuff can be taken to a commercial level and it starts to feel really icky. The one thing that I'm really tuned in with is astrology, which I don't know. I can't say much about like its connection to science, although, yes, it's connected to the stars and the moons and all that. It is very helpful for me with like mental health and journaling and being more in touch with myself. And so, although, yes, it is kind of a rejection of the ways in which Western people practice knowing who they are and, you know, praying to a higher power, it's just basically helped me a lot with my mental health. And so that's kind of where it ends for me. But I guess if I would think more deeply about why I choose to practice certain things, it always comes back to being anti-status quo for me. But that's all I wanted to add.
I will say for me, I'm not really a crystals person so much, but there are some kind of more woo-woo practices that I incorporate into my life. And I will say that my mental health is very bad sometimes. Like, I'm very anxious and I'm very depressed, and incorporating these things into my life that kind of like are with the understanding that there is rhyme and reason to things, and there is like powers greater than myself that aren't like our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, is helpful. Like, believing that nature has my back is helpful for me when I'm having tough mental health times. So I don't totally even care if it's like valid to everyone or even scientifically backed, because it makes me feel better, and I consider that kind of stuff therapeutic. So that is the way in which woo-woo stuff incorporates itself into my life.
Yeah, I live next to a witchy witch shop filled with potions, among other things, that Lacey introduced me to. And there is a little potion of drops you can take to help collective liberation, and there's a little potion you can take drops of for a gender magic. And for both collective liberation and gender magic, I really appreciate that they exist for a couple of reasons. One is because they're made by like generally like queer feminist local women or femmes, and I like giving them my money. That makes me feel good. Another thing is that I also have like very bad mental health and a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression, and it can be really, really hard for me to feel safe and to feel loved and cared for. And when I take a magic potion that is supposed to make me feel loved and cared for, I feel more loved and cared for. And that's not necessarily any like magical qualities in this $20 potion. It's just like me taking a moment for myself to tell myself that everything is okay and that I'm safe and that the world isn't going to hurt me in this moment. And that's valuable to me. And so it's just like a sort of a meditation tool and a self-care tool, and any power that comes from outside is appreciated, but it's not necessary for me to use this in a way that is helpful to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So often I can go through my days like super anxiously and on autopilot. And when I stop to do XYZ thing that is designed with the intention to make me feel safe and loved and cared for, it makes me feel better no matter what, because I'm pausing in order to put my own attention to doing that. And I think that that is very good.
Absolutely. And I think that that is a part that's missing sometimes too, is that there's a lot of agency in this. Like, it's not as though we think this magical potion, outer force, these mix of powders and essential oils are doing some Disney magic stuff on their own. It's like you're taking the agency to like do a ritual, to find grounding, to connect with, you know, the earth and the stars and the moon and whatever else your sort of chosen things that you worship are, or not worship necessarily in that language. But yeah, there's a lot of agency in that. And I think that's really, who else is going to take care of marginalized people, women and other folks who don't get the things that we need in the world? So take it into our own hands with crystals, spells, astrology charts, etc.
Yep. I gotta go. I love.
Thanks for being here.
I love you all. This was so fun.
We love you. This was super fun. We had a lot more questions, so we'll have to do another segment sometime.
That sounds good.
Cool.
Okay, bye, everyone.
Okay. Okay, bye. Bye.